This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Perhaps nobody in the world of business and economics is paid attention to more than Warren Buffett, the billionaire investor, head of Berkshire Hathaway. He's been running that for decades. And throughout all that time, Carol Loomis of Fortune magazine has been following his career. She's just put together a new book about him called Tap Dancing to Work. And I am joined now by both Carol Loomis and Warren Buffett. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks
for having
Very
us.
Nice here.
Well, I want to first ask you, what is it that you get about the economy that almost nobody else seems to get?
Well, I don't think it. I have an overriding view that there's never been an economy like the American economy, and that basically we're just getting started. We have a system that unlocks human potential. It's been doing it for a couple hundred years. It's going to do it for many hundred years to come. So, but I don't think that view is unique to me, but I do hold it consistently. And then I look at individual businesses as we go along to try and figure out ones that are going to do very well over time.
But you've done much better than a lot of other people.
Well, I haven't been swayed by emotion as much as other people. It doesn't require any brains to figure out 15 years ago that maybe Coca-Cola has got something that's going to sell a little bit in the future. I don't get carried away with trends or get envious of how people are making money in something that I don't understand. I sort of stick with what I understand.
You're just thinking long term all the time.
But why not? I mean, if you buy a farm, you think long term. If you buy an apartment house, you think long term. Why shouldn't you think long term if you buy a piece of a business called a stock?
Carol Loomis, what do you think? What do you think he gets that nobody else seems to get?
Well, I think he has an upbeat personality, but it's really grounded in rationality and intelligence. And I'm sure I've been swayed by him, but I really believe in what he says and that he's thought it through. And I would agree I'm bullish about the economy as well. And of course he has this. His genius is in capital allocation, and that's the thing that he brings to the party that most other people do not bring. Some CEOs have no ability to deal with the allocation of capital. And you better get away from those stocks, by the way.
Is there something about being in Omaha that helps, that is you're not in the Northeast bubble as so many of your colleagues are?
I think it helps to be away from lots of chatter, no matter where it may be. So, I mean, whether it's Los Angeles or New York or you name it, I don't want to hear what a lot of other people think. I just want a lot of facts. And I want to sit there unaffected by whether it's sunny or cloudy outside or anything of the sort, and certainly unaffected by whether the people around me are feeling great or feeling terrible. And I just want to look at the facts and see where they lead me.
Well, on that note, I saw in the book back in the 80s, you wrote, "We don't make judgments based on ratings. If we wanted Moody's or S&P to run our money, we'd give it to them." So you're doing your own research. You're not focusing on these rating agencies.
I don't care what other people think at all. I mean, in the end, I'm not handing my money over to anybody else or my shareholders' money. So if I can't understand it myself, I'm not going to do anything based on somebody else's view.
Do you think the ratings agencies serve any purpose?
Well, they serve a purpose, but they don't serve a purpose for me.
What is the biggest mistake you think that Warren Buffett has made over the time that you've been following his career?
Are you thinking about investment mistakes?
Sure, investment mistakes or anything.
Keep it to investment mistakes.
Among the examples you would find in the book, he made a large investment in ConocoPhillips a few years ago that didn't work out that well. He sold it, took a large loss, which is not very common for Warren. I mean, he just doesn't have that many losses on his books to take. So that's probably the biggest thing that I think of right now.
I bought a company called Dexter Shoe, for example, in the mid-90s and paid $400 million, a little more than that. And it went to zero, but the worst part of it was I paid $400 million in stock. So considering where the stock is now, that probably cost me maybe $3 billion or something. It's just a small mistake.
Well, you tend to write a lot. You tend to write a lot in general, but you also have written to congressmen over the years and politicians. You wrote, I saw, to Congressman Dingell, also back in the 80s. You were arguing against some new futures trading that was being proposed, and you wrote, "We do not need more people gambling in non-essential instruments identified with the stock market in this country." And I thought, well, there's a lot of stuff right now that's non-essential. You could easily call it non-essential. Do you think that there's a lot of trading that doesn't need to be done?
Oh, well, overwhelmingly, people don't need to trade. I mean, you know, if you decide to buy a farm, you buy it because you think that the crops will, you know, so many bushels an acre of corn or soybeans. You buy it based upon what the farm is going to do. You don't get a quote on it every day. You don't get a quote on it every year. You look to the asset itself to see whether you made a satisfactory investment. People, when they buy stocks and sell them a week later or a month later or have target prices for them or all that, it's basically, it borders on gambling, and sometimes it's outright gambling. People love to gamble. I mean, you know, people travel thousands of miles to go and do unintelligent things, you know.
Yeah.
and so it's a very human characteristic, but it can be expensive if done any place, and particularly in the stock market.
Is it possible, do you think, to get rid of a lot of these this trading that goes on right now, to just outlaw it?
Well, I don't know whether you can outlaw it. I try to discourage it, but Ben Graham was trying to discourage it 60 years ago. Yeah. When he wrote his books. And the propensity to gamble is terrific. And then when you get things like the internet that make it very easy maybe to day trade or something of the sort, you know, just look at the lines around lottery tickets or whatever it may be. I have no interest in gambling. I mean, I think investing is so much fun and so profitable.
Do you think Wall Street is still in the business of creating capital for businesses?
Well, it does that, but it's to some extent it's like a large building, and it you know, it has a wonderful restaurant in one place, and it has a casino in another place, and sometimes the casino is too attractive to have very many people in the dining room.
When you were writing this book, and over the time that you've been following Warren Buffett's career,
right,
what did you learn about him writing this book that you didn't already know?
I'm not sure I learned anything new, but now I really know Warren awfully well, and so I could have written several books probably, but I really was impressed early in the book to run across an example of his when he was helping run Grinnell's money, where he would not put money into Grinnell College, where he would not. He just stood by while other people invested Grinnell's money in a company being started by Bob Noyce that was going to turn out to be Intel, very famous company. And Warren he didn't object at all, but he just said, you know, I don't know anything about semiconductors, and so this is really not something into which I should have any input.
Yep.
And that consistency and how that carried forward, he was saying the same thing in the bubble. While being amazed at how far the bubble was going. And I think I really came away impressed by his consistency of thought.
There are a lot of people who have become millionaires because of you. do you think about that?
Well, it's nice. I mean, and there have been some billionaires, too. And if they went with me early, they're my age. I mean, they're in their 80s. They give away a lot of money. I mean, it's been particularly helpful in Omaha and Nebraska. But, no, it's It's nice to have your friends grow prosperous with you.
Speaking of giving away money, you've given away a lot. You will give away a lot of your money, much of it to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Do you think it's a responsibility of somebody who has as much money as you do to give most of it away?
Well, it's hard for me to understand why they don't. I mean, I have everything in the world I want. There's literally nothing that money can buy that I want. If there were, I'd go out and buy it today. And I have all this excess left over, and it can do a lot of good for other people, and it can't do any good for me. I'm enormously fortunate. I mean, everything I want, I have. So I think that when you get to that stage in life, and your money will, you know, it will let people live. It will let people get educated. It will do all kinds of things for other people. And all it will do for you, and maybe you want to build a tomb like the pharaohs or something like that and have people come around 1,000 years from now and say, well, there's where old Warren is, you know. I just think it's a little crazy if you don't get it into the hands of people where it's useful.
I want to just get your thoughts. I think our listeners would like to hear your thoughts on some of the economic issues of the day quickly, if I could. Do you think the fiscal cliff is going to be avoided this year?
I don't know the answer to that, but we may run over a little bit. We're not going to run over by 6 months or anything of the sort. So it may be that it requires the passage of New Year's Eve to get people to act. But it will not be something that we're talking about a year from now.
How do you think we get past this gridlock in Washington that has really created so much uncertainty for business in this country?
Yeah, well, we finally get 535 or a majority of 535 people to realize that they really have to behave like grown-ups, and they have to raise perhaps 18.5% of GDP in revenues, and they can spend 21%. And And if they do that, they'll have a happy household. And if they're no matter how rich a household is, if it spends way more than it takes in, you know, it's going to be unhappy, and it's going to have a lot of unhappy members. And it's not a complicated proposition, and they really all know the equation. We'll get an answer.
How do you think we can get back to 4% growth or more in this country?
Well, 4% is a pretty big number. But
these days.
But even take a subpar 2%. If we have 1% population growth and we have 2% real growth in output, that's 20% in 20 years. If every generation lives 20% better than the generation before, that is not bad. I think we'll do better than that. But 20% in a generation is not bad.
What's your biggest economic concern in the year ahead?
Well, I think that we run the risk always of substantial inflation, but not immediate, but it's so much easier for legislators to print money to try and solve problems, and it solves them for a very short period. I mean, it feels very good. If I had a printing press in my basement, I mean, I'd probably use it. So I can't really condemn those legislators, but I think that in a democracy, it's always looms as a threat, and only vigilance on the part of legislators and the Federal Reserve and really the public will keep it from being abused at some point.
Carol Loomis, what's the best year that he's had since you've known him?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'd have to have the annual report. Warren, help me out. What is the best year you've had?
The best year I've ever had was 1954. That actually was the best year for the stock market in my history.
Huh.
I did almost 100 percentage points better than the than the Dow Jones average in that year.
And what was it about? How did you do that?
Well, I was working with a very small amount of money. That made it a lot easier. But listen, the best year is the next year.
You're always looking forward to the
absolutely.
Best year. And what about the worst year?
What's been the toughest
year for you?
Worst business year. Worst year personally is when somebody close to me would die,
sure.
Obviously. But statistically, perhaps 1999 or some year like that when the internet bubble was on and we weren't participating. But that doesn't really make any difference to me. I'm looking at what I'm doing with the money, and if I feel satisfied with it, what other people are doing does not bother me.
How does he stay such a normal guy as a billionaire?
Well, he just has had a normal temperament all the way through and all the way through his life. And he's just not tempted by the things that other people. And he now has a plane that he flies around with. And he says that's, you know, it's obviously a big improvement in his life. But there's nothing, as Warren has said, there's nothing that he couldn't buy that if he really wanted it. Yachts, believe me, has no interest in yachts. Expensive food, hamburgers are what he wants.
Which brings me to my final question, which is, what is your favorite meal at McDonald's? Because I know you go there.
Well, depends what time of day. I get a sausage McMuffin in the morning. Sometimes I get a two of them, and I put the sausage parts together, and I call that a sausage McBuffet. But I'll get a quarter pounder and fries at lunch. Sometimes, a lot of times, I'll send out and just get a strawberry malt for lunch. And you know, I like the same things I liked when I was at my fifth birthday party. I mean, that was a big day. I mean, hot dogs, hamburgers, chocolate sundaes. I really haven't found anything better.
Have they put a McDonald's inside Berkshire Hathaway?
There's one very nearby.
And yesterday we went to an expensive lunch. I mean, an expensive hotel for lunch with a New York Times journalist. And we all three had hamburgers. That I'm sure we were the first three people in there who had done that.
Yeah. One reason you talk about changing, I found what I liked when I was in my 20s or earlier. I mean, I found what I like to eat. I found the kind of people I like to associate with. I found what I like to do during the day, how I like to dress, what I like to watch on TV. And I've seen no reason to change just because I got richer.
Well, you wrote that you only like to do business with people that you trust and admire and like. Does that keep you from hearing from people who don't agree with you or are rude or?
Well, there's some people that would cause my stomach to churn if I and why would you do? You wouldn't marry somebody like that. And you know, when I get in business with them, I mean, it's a marriage of sorts. I mean, you are crazy. I always say to people, you're crazy to marry for money to start with, and you're really crazy to marry for money if you're already rich. Well, I'm already rich, so I am not going to marry people in business for money.
The book is called Tap Dancing to Work, Warren Buffett on Practically Everything. Carol Loomis put it together, and Warren Buffett, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.